Blog Talk Radio, and welcome to the Sunday show with Jack Jodell, and Wayne Johnson's here, and I'm Gwen Berry. 50 years ago at Kent State, there was more or less a massacre that took place, and for a moment, we're just going to give it a little bit of pause and remembrance with Mr. Young.
Yeah, completely avoidable, terrible tragedy that occurred 50 years ago, and one that's totally avoidable, of course. And had it not been for the arch-conservative, James Strickland was the governor of Ohio back then? And
yeah.
I think that was who it was. And he wanted to make damn sure that he showed those students they couldn't push him around, you know, one of those guys. Right in the Spiro Agnew mold, you know.
That's
and the
true.
Thing is,
my bad, it's not 50 years. It was May 4th, 1970, but, you know, we have an anniversary there, so.
Yeah.
Life magazine did a very good article on that when that happened. And, of course, you know, the iconic front cover of the girl laying on the sidewalk with the other girl screaming in agony and for the atrocity. That girl was just walking to class. She wasn't even part of the demonstration. They opened up to the crowd. She was an innocent person that just happened to catch the bullet that was just blindly fired into nothing.
Well, you know,
completely ridiculous.
Everything old seems to be new again, especially from that era. This week has brought a lot of different false flags up as far as what Russia is going to do and what United States is going to do and what each leader is saying and how the EU countries are responding. A gentleman by the name of Paul Craig Roberts does a blog in Russia, or actually he's Ukraine, and he wrote a piece called The Looting of Ukraine Has Begun, and I wanted to share it because it really puts things into perspective. And I think it comes to bear. And, you know, after I get it read, I think you guys would be really great in discussing just how much of it you think is workable, if I can say that. And I'll begin. According to a report in Kommersant, Ukraine, the Finance Ministry of Washington's stooges in Kiev, who are pretending to be a government, has prepared an economic austerity plan that will cut Ukrainian pensions from $160, we're talking dollars here, to $80, so that Western bankers who lent money to Ukraine can be repaid at the expense of Ukraine's poor. And that's not BS. That's something
on the long line of economic rapes of the people by corporate America and banks.
It's Greece all over again, only it was the IMF with Greece. Before anything approaching stability and legitimacy has been obtained for the puppet government put in power by Washington-orchestrated coup against the legitimate elected Ukraine government, the Western looters are already at work, naive protesters who believed the propaganda that the EU membership offered a better life are due to lose half their pensions by April. But that's only the beginning. And, you know, I got to ask you guys, what do you think is actually, I mean, have you been keeping up with what's been going on over there? You can't really trust what you're getting in mainstream media at all. You got to
sift through a real minefield to get at it. You know, it's been pretty much they're trying to portray Putin as being the bad guy and us the good guys, like they always try to do, you know. And it isn't that easy. It isn't that simple.
Well, listen, even what we call unlovingly call the Obots, they're actually getting it too. They're saying, how stupid do you think we are? We see what you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going through social media pages that are dedicated to liberal Democrats and to people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Her Facebook page is posted with lots of questions asking, you know, you think we're dumb? And it's people who have gone along and gone along and gone along, and you know, there's only so much you can go along with until you really sit down and say more of the same, you know?
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing more than the chess match, you know, of each superpower moving their pawns into place. You know, like I said last week, Putin is not going to let that Crimean warm water naval port go. He's got to keep it to keep themselves a global power. Plus, two, I like the quote by Hegel said, you know, all great world historic facts and personages appear, so to speak, twice. The first time as a tragedy, the second time as a farce. Well, what we're seeing right now happened in 1905, right before the Russian Revolutionary War with the Tsar. They tried to break away. The Tsar of Russia just came, sent in the Cossacks. They just, you know, kicked butt, took names, and, you know, pulled them all back in line. Well, this is, again, Putin. He's got to do the same thing. He's going to come in. They're going to kick. They're going to keep them in line. And plus two, the America, United States, and NATO, you know, are still just, like I said, moving the chess pieces, trying to keep their influence encroaching more and more into the Russian mainland bordered spheres. You know, you've got Poland now. They're looking to put anti-missiles in there. Also, they like the Czech Republic and what was Eastern Bloc?
Slovakia. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, yeah. and all that. So, matter of fact, it was during the Bush and Cheney, they put up a early warning radar against Russia's protest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all under the guise of, well, if Iran launches missiles into Europe, you know, we'll be able to detect it sooner and get our anti-missiles up, trying to strike them out of the air.
Right.
You know, and the thing is, and Reagan said, you know, you always negotiate from a position
of strength. Yeah, right.
And Putin learned that lesson, too. I mean, it's, you know, it's not unique to Americans that we realize this. You know, anybody who does global negotiations knows the man who's got the strength and the upper hand and the better cards is the one that's going to call the shots in the game. And right now,
and vacuums are always filled by some power source, and that's what we're seeing here too.
Absolutely. Well,
so,
well stated,
you know,
Jack. Well stated.
Yeah, and you know, it's just history repeating itself in so many ways. There isn't much new in this whole scenario. And we just, again, we don't have a firm leg to stand on, and we've, and our motives are not all that grand anyway. So you know, it's best for us to just let it develop as it's going to. We have no say in the matter. We can stop and make noise and piss and moan, but that isn't going to do any good, and it isn't going to solve anything. So you know,
basically, Jack. Basically, we've got a lot to say right now because the government that's in power right now in Ukraine has chosen to side with the surprised leaders who were surprised by the Russian aggression, Obama and Merkel. They didn't know what hit them. You know, when Putin said, hey, wait a minute, this is a little bit crazy. It's gone enough. I don't know if y'all have been keeping up on just how convoluted the politics are with the people who are sitting in leadership right now in Ukraine, the ones that our government is backing and our leaders are over there glad-handing with. They're real nasty, tyrannical.
They're nasty people. Yeah, they're bad people.
Yeah.
Well, it's typical. When you have the IMF involved, pulling the purse strings and trying to dictate policy, and that's exactly what's happening here, it's going to be disastrous for regular, ordinary people and for workers. It's just going to be a bank holiday for the banks, and they're going to go in there and provide austerity budgets for people. It's going to hurt people, and it's going to benefit banks, and that's what we've got facing us right now.
Well, here's one scenario that I see is – like I said, Europe gets about 30% plus, maybe plus or minus, of their natural gas to heat their homes and stuff via pipelines from Russia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can convince them to put sanctions on and wean off that pipeline dependence from Russia. We'll increase our fracking here in this country, load it up on natural gas barges, and then haul it over to Europe. So it could be like a big boom for our natural gas oil, hydrocarbon industry here.
And a disaster for our environment.
Well, yes, and also you got to realize you guys are saying the IMF is calling the shots, but that's not completely altogether on the table because Western or, you know, American banking sources, large banking resources have piled billions of dollars into resource development in Ukraine in the last year. And that's why our butts are over there, you know, with Kerry glad-handing and, you know, that's for real.
That's a good point. Very good point.
I think it comes to bear on who's getting the ear of who and who's really running things over there because it's being run like
big money.
West Town over there. I mean, you see any of the videos or any of the news coming out of there. I mean, I've sat and listened and just watched people listen to tones of voices and seen. I mean, you watch a video of what's going on in these meetings and provinces in Ukraine, and you see these thugs enter the room with clubs in their hands and ski masks on, and they go and they stand behind whoever's on the dais with the microphone as the leadership or in front of the dais. And people will say things, but if they say something that isn't appreciated, then they're immediately costed, at least lip service-wise, by these thugs.
Well, let's put it this way. It is not democracy in action, that's for sure.
Well, it's tyranny.
It's the oligarchy's acting up again. I mean, it's obvious.
I'm sorry you made me laugh at that one.
Well, it is. It's pathetically funny.
Yeah, really. It's definitely not democracy.
Yeah.
Well, there's none around to be had anywhere.
Really, yeah.
I mean,
been
take a look at what
polluted
happened
by corporates.
Occupy. Mm-hmm. During Occupy, you saw Department of Homeland Security trained police going out and cracking heads all over the place. People are still, if you walk out in this country and join a protest in the street, there is no guarantee you will not be called a terrorist, a domestic terrorist, and placed in jail for 30
right.
years. That's reality. It's happening.
That's true. And that's why democracy has been compromised severely over the past, ever since 9/11. Really, since, and that was about the beginning of the Bush administration.
I've always said the success of a democracy is based on the art of truth. And what has been slung from so many other news sources and conservative radio stuff has been such a fallacy, a farce, not even fractionally factored.
Yeah. Well, let's look at CPAC's going on right now. What a load of bullshit that is, and that's absolute bullshit. Every one of those people are out in left right field somewhere. They're crazier than hell. I mean, I heard a funny quote this week. I was watching Stephanie Miller's program on Free Speech TV, and one of the guys that called in is going to be co-hosting for her while she's on vacation this next week, and they were all talking about CPAC and all the wackos, the Rand Pauls and the Ted Cruzes and the Michelle Bachmans of the world that, you know, were spouting their mouths off and not talking truth, they're talking nonsense. And so this guy said, well, you guys don't knock CPAC too much. I find CPAC valuable. It's the only place that showed me that Barack Obama was both Neville Chamberlain and Hitler at the same time.
Well,
I laughed so hard when I heard that.
Here's what I wrote down when I was listening to CPAC. Someone asked me about it. My notes were, CPAC is nothing more than a circus sideshow that
right.
P.T. Barnum built his business plan around. A sucker is born every minute.
Right.
It's nothing more than a calamity clutch collection posing as a political fraction with as much validity as a Three Stooges video clip.
Right. Who wrote that? That's awesome. That's very true.
That's me. That was me.
Oh,
sorry.
Great job, man. Good observation. Yeah, you nailed it. That's about it.
If nothing else, we make it entertaining. Here's the other good thing. All right, CPAC comes out, right, and they're going to say that Ted Cruz or, you know, one of the other wing nuts is going to be their choice for a political, for a president candidate. To me, that does nothing more than guarantee another democracy precedent. And if you count the electoral votes as they are right now,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a Democratic president for many years to come, provided
yeah.
the people get out and vote. If you really look at what the core people's beliefs in this nation, they do
mm-hmm.
not side with the CPAC mentality.
No, they don't. That's
more
right.
moderate. And
they're
exactly.
banging, more progressive.
They're banging drums that are dead. I mean, they're beating
exactly.
dead horses over there.
Their whole philosophy is dead,
yeah,
let's face it. And, you know, we have justified complaints about Barack Obama. There's no doubt about it. He is a bought-out corporate Wall Street Democrat, let's face it. And some of his stuff is okay, but a lot of it's tainted, and a lot of it's pro-corporate America and pro-bank. And it's you know, really, for us progressives, it leaves very little very little to be desired. But we, at least when we criticize him, we do so based on fact, and we don't pull out wild theories that he's a socialist and he's not. He's a Nazi, he's not.
It's
neither of those things, you know?
He's not a socialist. Maybe he wouldn't pass XL Pipeline, which he's getting ready to do, while
That's
everybody's
right.
sitting around talking about Crimea and Ukraine and thinking
right.
about, you know, talking points that have nothing at all.
They're trying
to
sneak that through, yeah.
That's the head swinger right now.
Well, I saw Ed Schultz came out against it the other day. He had been pro-pipeline for quite a while, but he changed his tune, and he publicly admitted so on his program. That was great, and it was a victory for progressives, a small victory at least. And so, you know, but I don't think he's going to be successful.
Ed Schultz is somebody I used to think knew what he was talking about until I realized that he was completely bought and paid for.
Yeah,
I
but, you know, he differs with Obama on that. You know, he's been convinced, I think, by Stephanie Miller, actually, that, no, that's the wrong way to go, pal. You know, whether it creates jobs or not, it'll destroy the atmosphere and or destroy our farmland and our water sources and stuff, and it's just a bad move. So,
You know, there's a very good article.
But you get anybody in office who's...
Oh, they get bought out. They get co-opted into it.
The same thing. And you know, the Secretary of State that preceded Kerry, she spent her globetrotting and nailing down the TPP treaty. That's what she... been doing just about the whole time in office. Mm-hmm. And a lot of I hear women speaking about, but wouldn't it be great to have the first woman I would rather see a corpse in the office than that woman.
I'd rather see Bernie Sanders.
Well, you know, he's not going to run for office.
No, right. I don't.
Stan has the gracious knowledge of knowing that if you run for the highest office in the land, you can't get anything done.
Yeah. It's terrible the way corporations have maneuvered it so that, you know, you are is a silly little figurehead if that's all you – and that's the best value you can provide because you're powerless politically or economically to change the way things are going. It's really disheartening to see what's happening on the landscape there.
Well, you know, I'm – convinced more and more, Jack, that the way to actually shift our government is to shift how we spend our dollars and how we vote locally about how our dollars are spent.
We need a radical overhaul. There's no doubt about it.
People who are still spending money at Walmart because, you know, they can't afford to, you know, buy any place else. That's got to stop. People have got to start spending money with integrity and understanding that their money supplies the politicians who are taking advantage of them and keeping them under the yoke of wage slavery.
They should go to Costco rather than Walmart, no doubt about it.
Well, Costco at least pays medical
pays good
benefits
good
and
wage.
Has a retirement plan and
right.
things like
They're good
that.
To their
right.
employees. They don't exploit them. Walmart exploits everybody. It exploits its vendors. It exploits its labor force. It exploits the public. It's pathetic. It's so self-centered. It's just unbelievable.
My wife will tell you I will go out of my way to pay $2 more for a pair of socks made in this country than in China. I will gladly fork over $2 more for that packet of socks.
Right.
I'm not against buying a pair of socks that are made in Bangladesh as long as the people making them are getting a living wage and being taken care of.
Yeah, but very few are.
I don't. You know, the thing is, guys, and I know you all think I'm probably crazy, but this thing about borders and nationalism and not understanding that if we don't get together as a species, there's not going to be generations to come. And I can't proceed forward politically.
Well, corporatism is destroying the entire planet. It is, regardless of what type of government you have, regardless of whether it's a military junta that's ruling the country, regardless of whether it's a so-called democracy, regardless of whether it's a dictatorship, at the behest of it all, the background in all of it is controlled by corporatism and major corporations, and they're destroying the entire world.
You know, when I was in the Navy, there was a story about, you know, kind of a survival in the jungle type of thing, that if you hollowed out and anchored a coconut, and put something shiny and just made it big enough for a monkey to get his hand into the coconut, and you dropped like your dog tags into something shiny, he would reach in, grab hold of the shiny object, but he couldn't get his hand out because he has a fist. But yet he would stand there and hold on to that while you walked up and clubbed him to death. That's how you would get meat in the jungle.
Yeah.
Man is a primate. He has got his hand on that little shiny object, that comfort of living of, you know, the car and the gasoline and everything mm-hmm. else. We aren't going to let it go until we're clubbed to death.
That's a good analogy.
That's the kind of way I almost see that, is nature of the species.
But, guys, I got to tell you, I think that's what little programs like this are for. I think
right.
we're about waking people up to this so that they let go of the shiny object. I think
right.
that's the responsibility of thinking individuals and knowledgeable and people who are looking for the truth underneath all the dreck and saying, you know, hey, listen, wait a minute. You got to spend your money the right way because this is what they understand. They understand losing profit.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody actually got together in this country alone for one day, you remember those emails that used to go around saying, you know, nobody buy gas today?
Oh, yeah.
If we actually did that, if everybody in this country actually stopped buying petroleum from gas stations for one day, do you know what that would do to the petroleum industry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would create big waves.
Think of what it would do if we did it for 2 days in a row.
Well, you know, boycotts like that used to work because people actually took and ran with them. In the, I think it was the 70s, late 70s maybe it was, there was a big sugar boycott because overnight sugar just seemed to go up, boom, 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 and housewives got pissed, and they said, forget it. So there was a big boycott of sugar, and it was successful. And, you know, it can be done, but people just don't have, they want it the easy way. They don't want to take the stand anymore. They don't want to deprive themselves for a minute of something that that'll be
Jack,
much higher cost for the next 10 years if they don't. It's just stupid.
But Jack, if they know they take an action, one action in unity, in union with
right.
the rest of the people around them, and they're aware of what that action can do, if they're informed people, and that's why
right.
social networks, I beg you guys to remember, we are on social networking here.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if,
right, exactly.
People, I mean, I don't understand why two erudite fellows like yourself are not tweeting the hell out of shit, especially your blog, and on, you know, that annoying Facebook. Jack, got to show you how to turn off all that stuff that keeps feeding
you. I don't even remember my password anymore. I got to get back into it or something. I need some help on that, Gwen. But I can't put up with that annoying bullshit constantly.
Yeah, well, it's just turning a couple of things off, and it's not hard to do. But here's the thing, it's just knowing how. But the thing is that there are so many thousands of people waking up every week and going, what the hell? I actually put a comment in a line today saying, because these progressive people that are on the I think it's the Michelle Obama Appreciation, one of the, her pages, people were saying, are they kidding? What are they doing? You know, and I even forget what the topic was about, but I put down in the comments, I put, you know, even the Obots are starting to get it. And
mm-hmm.
People said, you're darn right, you know, it's gone on too far.
Well, that's good, and this has to continue, I agree, no doubt about it, because not enough people are aware, and that's, we play our little role here on this show, and you do a lot on other social networks, Gwen, I know, part of our whole network here with the other bloggers and the other people from various social network areas are contributing stuff all the time, but so far it hasn't been unified into the big powerful thing that it needs to be to really exert the change.
Well,
but we've got to keep working at it, and I agree.
I actually think there was a huge shift in social.
Well, it's got to happen.
Yes, when people got into Tahrir Square in Egypt. And it's been dominoing and recycling all over the globe. Over, you know, the maiden protests in Ukraine that started all of this over there were not about a bunch of fascists. They were about plain people looking for their rights under a corrupt government. And, of course, it was hijacked out from under them. But the point is that people, how did they get there and why did they stay so long? Well, because they were all tweeting one another and saying, this is where we're meeting up. You know, Twitter saved lives in the streets of Ukraine like they did in Egypt and they have in Greece because people tweeted one another in different places on the streets and said, look out, they're coming with plastic bullets. Look out, they're coming with shields and batons. You know, they did the same thing in Oakland. I'm cheerleading, of course, for the Occupy groups and the rebels all over with our Guido masks on, saying, you know, I'm not cutting it out. I'm not stepping back either. And if it's just going to be me and two other people in the street, well, I guess, you know, if I don't show
up. That's the way it's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Senior moment. great idea. Just like, the point is that all of this goes on, and it's April 4th. There's a wave of action taking place on the social networks and on blogs. And in these little tiny radio shows, a lot of them which are posted over at the Commons Project Network, which is posted more than Route 37 online. And there's all kinds of people that are putting from popular resistance to, you know, like Dennis Traynor, who's now doing an elongated version. And it's on Free Speech TV. Once a week or once a month now, I think, Jack, his acronym TV with the Resistance Report.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm going to have to look for that. That's great. I'm all for it. I want to see that.
Absolutely no corporate backing there. It's all grassroots. And on April 4th, we're putting the message out, and, you know, Anonymous has done some videos too, but a lot of people have, about a new wave of action, and that action is taking place any way you can do it, man, any way you can do it, whether it's by writing a blog and posting it or it's by social networking or whatever, in the streets meeting and putting up your signs, you know, it every which way but loose.
I was going to say, the more that you can put the voice in the people's hands this way, one of the things that kind of comes to my mind as you were saying that was the old TV show Twilight Zone with Rod Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of morality plays. There were a lot that were anti-McCarthyism, subtext kind of plays. And, of course, corporations that were funding for the advertisement said, you know what, you're pushing us a little too far. You know, and, you know, we're the ones putting up the money. You need to tone it down a bit. Well, he was subservient to the money until finally they just said, you know what, yeah, we're going to shut this show down. And they came out with something else that was a little more pablum, tasty, kind of thing.
And he went on to
And that's
do
what I like about, without being funded, people can get the voice out and actually write their own views and aspects, saying the truth as they see it for others to read. It's not tainted by money.
You do realize Sterling told McCarthy to go fuck himself, right?
Yes,
I did.
Thank you very much. Yeah, absolutely.
He did. He stood up to that, and almost every script that came across his desk for Twilight Zone was a moral play. You're right. You're quite right. To say, you know, resist the confirmation to being oppressed and to spending money the wrong way and to destroying your community and destroying ethics and efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly what he was doing. I took a creative writing course from him in Ithaca.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
cool.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I am so congratulations. I'm extremely jealous of you.
There were over 200 people in that class, but he managed to spend at least 20 minutes one-on-one with everybody. He was always in jeans, work boots, and plaid shirts.
Yeah, he's a pretty down-home natural guy in many ways. You mentioned Dennis Traynor a little bit ago. Now, you have a clip you wanted to play, didn't you, Gwen?
I did, yeah, and if you gentlemen would take up the slack while I search it out, thank you very much, Jack, for bringing it up.
Yeah, great. I definitely want to hear that, no doubt about it. Yeah, and Rod Serling was a real pioneer of his day, of the television, the early television age. And I miss those days because you saw thought-provoking TV, not pablum, not crap, not this variety, or this, what do they call it now, reality TV. How utterly
reality
boring
TV.
And how unreal.
I agree, Jack. You're
I noticed now the military channel has been a pro-military thing for years, ever since it's been on. It's changed its name now to the American Heroes Channel. Oh, give me a break! So they're glorifying, you know, American military involvement, and they still have some military programming of historical value, but it's a lot of talk about snipers and glorifying all that kind of stuff, and it's very sick, and it's what's wrong with American TV can be found right there, a lot of it.
Yeah, there's a program back in the 60s, it's called Combat, and these guys, you know, cigars in their mouth, gritting their teeth, and how they actually won World War II all by themselves, basically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So a kid was totally eat up with it.
It focused on the common soldier.
Vic Morrow.
Yeah. Vic Morrow, that's right.
Vic Morrow, there you go.
I have the clip from Acronym that I wanted to play. This is Dennis Traynor Jr. And
great.
This is about the landlords on Wall Street, the new housing scheme that's going down right now. So it's about
that's vital. Let's hear it. You bet.
Everything's falling apart, basically. They're doing a lot of paste, cover work here, and like honestly I'm fearing that one day this building is going to fall on us because the work is so bad.
In 2007, a conglomerate of private equity firms and investors bought this building and 41 others. This purchase is part of a massive wave of Wall Street cashing in on the effects of the 2008 housing crash. In just the last 2 years, hedge funds and private equity firms have spent more than $20 billion amassing the largest rental empire that this nation has ever seen. In New York City, Wall Street has been buying up apartments and houses for more than a decade, and advocates say that this predatory equity scheme has been bad for the market and for tenants alike.
When they came in, they was offering us money to move. They offered me $5,000 so I could move. You can't, you know, $5,000 isn't going to take you anywhere.
Especially if you've lived there for a decade.
Exactly. So a lot of people, you know, they would like know that they've lived here for like 20, 30, 40 years. They're not going to go anywhere. So they stayed. And I guess basically that ruined their plans. So they found other ways of basically hiking up the rent.
Because this building is rent regulated, the investors' first plan was to try to evict the tenants, renovate the apartments, and then rent them out at a higher rate. But when families didn't want to move, the owners then moved to their second plan. They let these buildings become unlivable.
My name is Benjamin Warren. I live at 1511 Sheridan Avenue, and I'm one of the tenant leaders at this building, in these two buildings, 1511-1521 Sheridan. Currently, we are working on trying to get our building back into shape. We're trying to eliminate problems with, say, work that's not being done. They're trying to say it is being done, but it's not being done. You have tenants being dragged into court unnecessarily. There are numerous problems here that I think, let's say, the management is totally ignoring. Not only this building, but the other 41 buildings that they totally ignore.
The private equity conglomerate has now defaulted on their $133 million mortgage. And now they're appealing to even more investors to invest even more Wall Street money in these buildings. But the tenants don't think that more investors, who only see their homes as numbers on a balance sheet, is the answer.
The last time they said that the bank was coming, I got organized with some of the tenants, and we put up flyers on the doors, basically warning the investors, don't invest here. You know, this is a bad investment. You know, run away, be wary, you know. And management told maintenance to take down all the flyers.
Economists and housing advocates are increasingly worried about Wall Street's new risky bet on housing. What they're doing is capitalizing on the dirt cheap prices of homes in cities where the crisis hit the hardest. And now they're turning housing into a get-rich-quick scheme again. This time, they're not peddling toxic mortgages. Instead, they're buying the houses right out from under us and renting them back to some of the very same families that were just foreclosed on. And the scariest part is that these companies are now packaging and bundling rent schemes into new unfunded securities. In other words, Wall Street is executing a massive land grab that has once again turned our homes into dangerous financial products. Sarah Ludwig, the executive director of the New Economy Project in New York, explains that today's particular land grab is part of a much longer crisis that is constantly threatening the stability of communities, particularly communities of color.
You've got those abusive, predatory loans that were made, the mortgage loans, in predominantly communities of color. The foreclosures are overwhelmingly concentrated in communities of color. You've got gentrification where communities of color are now places where more affluent tend to be white, or populations are moving in and pushing people out, buying, sort of in the community. So there's all these pressures on neighborhoods of color, so it plays out in a way that perpetuates segregation, perpetuates inequality, and perpetuates poverty.
But there are solutions, she explains, and many communities are offering visions and models of how to stop the increased financialization of our very community.
We're working with a bunch of groups, including Picture the Homeless and some other organizations, that are trying to stem the effects of gentrification and displacement by converting land to community land trusts.
There are already more than 250 community land trusts in the United States and hundreds of groups working to form more and working to organize against private equity firms that are going in and gobbling up the neighborhood. The movement is driven by the conviction that housing is fundamentally not a market commodity, but a human right.
And then it gives you hope to, like, okay, well, you know what, we may come through this. You know, okay.
Yeah.
You know, but then it's like I'm saying, I'm getting a lot of heat. You know, don't get involved. Don't do it. You know, don't bother.
Yeah.
It's no use. Why do you care? I don't want to live like an animal.
It's the building for...
And that's the tape, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's incredible. Absolutely
well,
incredible.
Hey.
How they victimize poor
Go
people
ahead,
over and over and over and over again. They use them, they exploit them, and they don't care in the least about them, and they just want to spit them out and recycle them. It is pathetic.
This is
going
on.
There's a very good article. I was going to say, there's a very good article in Rolling Stone, February the 27th, an article written by Matt, and I have to spell his last name because there's no way I'm pronouncing it, T as in tango, A-I-B-B-I.
Matt
Taibbi. He's great. Matt Taibbi is great.
You don't know Matt
okay.
Taibbi?
that would be the person. I'm sorry. No, totally. I was just a new exposure for me here.
Yeah, I've
seen
him on Free Speech TV, too.
The vampire squid strikes again. Banks are no longer just financing heavy industry. They are actually buying it up and inventing bigger, bolder, and scarier scams than ever. Because when the Phil Graham and the bank deregulating lobbyists
Bill Clinton,
deregulated yep. all the laws that were put in and FDR
Glass-Steagall.
And Joseph Kennedy put in,
mm-hmm.
then but they had to do that. Because they had to compete with the German and Japanese banks that were doing the same thing, then that's when Katie barred the door, nothing was off limits, there was no checks and balances anymore, and that's what threw us into this economic crash that we just went through here, still
mm-hmm.
trying to pull ourselves out.
Right.
And if anybody, pick up the Rolling Stone, February the 27th, or see if you can find it online, say the guy's name again, Matt.
Matt Taibbi. He's incredibly
Taibbi.
Good.
right?
Yeah.
The Vampire
he's on the same league as Glenn Greenwald. He's an awesome, awesome author. He's very good. Matt Taibbi is incredible.
I was very impressed with the article that he wrote, so yes.
These guys, well, Matt Taibbi's the one who came to Florida and sat in Tallahassee and proclaimed it the rocket docket as far as foreclosures go about 3 years ago. He's Matt Taibbi's right on top of stuff. He's part of Glenn Greenwald's new project at firstlook.org, The Intercept. This is a site that is breaking, you know, cutting-edge stuff.
Great.
Taibbi is a part of the crowd. You know, this is going on right here in Old Lake Worth in my community. It's an old part of, it's an old Florida town. It's right across the intercoastal from Palm Beach. And there's a lot of old homes that, you know, have gone into foreclosure. And the rent is, it's doable, it's livable right now, but you've got, I'm watching, you know, like next door to me, a fellow bought it, and there's like three families living in there in two separate buildings. Four families, and it makes for what you call slum conditions. There's in our streets here, like my house and a few other houses along the street are really nice, and then a few of them look like really badly kept, and they're just maintained to produce an income for whoever owns them. I'm fortunate. Mm-hmm. I have a really wonderful landlord. He owns the house because he bought it for his son while he was going to school, and he's just trying to make some money back off of it. But this is also what investment seekers, and this is Obama's White House, has put these programs out to help fund new business people, and half of the people in small business they're funding are people who are buying up these homes, too, and creating where it was a one-family dwelling. They're chopping these places up real inexpensively and real unsecure, and at least in my neighborhood, and making them into, you know, tight fits for people and jacking them up with rents. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible.
It is. It's horrible. Yeah.
Whether it's a conglomerate or it's a person who owns a restaurant downtown who gets a grant from the White House to buy, do more business in town, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what's happening.
Well, urban blight, unfortunately, is kind of a nature cycle of, real estate. I had an older home in a little small town on the Eastern Shore, and the property next door went up as a rental property, and they just abused it and, you know, sucked it dry, never fixed anything up, and it really became almost a comical calamity.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for the fact I was losing money each and every day as it deteriorated in the house next door.
Yeah. That's the other really bad thing that's going on. It's an awful shame for the property owners around here who are doing their best to be. I mean, I'm part of the neighborhood association here. I walk up and down after the trash is emptied, picking up trash that's flown away. And these folks next door to me are a real problem because they really don't care. You know, I don't think they've ever really known to care because that's not how life has dealt for them.
Mm-hmm.
They're mostly immigrants, and whether they're legal or not, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult situation, and I always want to be, I'm always kind first, but there's problems. There's real problems. I mean, it's just, and then you get into a city like New York or, you know, in Detroit, they're actually asking people to come and buy homes for, you know, just a pittance to regentrify neighborhoods and bring life back into the city.
I was going to say, not only Detroit, but outside of Pittsburgh, you know, when the steel industry died, there was a whole little suburb town from Pittsburgh that was just totally devastated. And the mayor says, look, since we've got commercial buildings here, if you've got an idea for a business, come on in, move into the building, try to fix it up a little bit, start your business. You know, if it's a little restaurant, if it's a little art gallery or, you know, whatever,
try to
start regenerating. And then, you know, I'll give you the building.
And that's
because now, it's all
has that program been successful, Wayne?
It's been a big improvement from what they had. It hasn't taken off as gangbusters because, again, the core dollars of in the area, you know, are not being generated. You know, I can start a restaurant, right? But if you only got $3 and you're going to try to feed your family a hamburger, you know?
Right. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But as things did improve and things diversified, at least it kind of got the property with somebody living in it and trying to fix it up and trying to keep it up so it just didn't become a decaying squalor or crack house or whatever.
Right. Well, you know, at the core of all this problem is just pure, simple greed. And, you know, it is so foolish. It's so self-serving. But really, it really isn't because they're trying to take all the money for themselves and create a narrow, tiny band at the very, 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 very top that has all the money, but they don't realize markets cannot grow out of nothing. You can't have all the money in the world and deprive small business owners and small-income people of the ability to buy things and to buy more things and create demand that way and expect your economy to prosper. What is wrong with these people? Why
don't
they get it?
I was going to say, when Reagan was preaching trickle-down theory, my voice was, that is, the truth is actually the inverse. Wealth trickles up. If you can supply something for a mat, no, there's Bill Gates. He came up with an operating system for personal computers, and as people got used to it and building up and stuff, he didn't have all the money and let it trickle down. He had it trickle up to him.
Exactly.
That's what
they all do.
Successful business, and that's the true what true
well,
business plan should be.
Well, you know,
now,
you
thankfully, know. he's been pretty philanthropical. He's been very generous to a certain extent with things, and that's good. But not too many are.
Not true.
Not
business-wise, he's locked in and corralled what he thinks is his. But the point is, I just got.
And he made victims in the meantime. There's no doubt.
Administration. I was just told, as a small businesswoman who exports goods to not only European cities, but I also send into Moscow. There's a little shop there that, you know, buys small orders from me every now and then.
I am being penalized.
I will be penalized under what Obama has just put into place. Every individual that does business with Russia is subject to that penalization.
Oh, yeah. When they impose the sanctions is what you're speaking
of. Right. And I also do business in Argentina to a couple of little healing centers. It's not huge. It's something to me. And it means something to them, too. And what we do is something that I consider morally and ethically a good thing, something for the community, whereas these guys are just thinking bottom-line profiteering or sovereignty.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the difference between micro and macroeconomics. The two are intertwined, and you know, a lot of people don't realize how one affects the other.
It hurts the smaller people. I'm not complaining. I'm not saying I'm hurting. What I'm saying is it's unjust and it's unreasonable to put all of the people beneath the corporations this way, and that we have to look up and see clarity what's being done to us in unity, in a union. We really have to know these things.
Right, exactly. And, you know, everybody deserves a spot at the table, and everybody deserves to take something from the table that nourishes them economically, whatever way you want to look at it. And, you know, for people to hoard everything for themselves, it is so absolutely insane. It just defies logic that they're like that. But it's pure, unadulterated greed, and it's got to be stopped.
But, Jack, you sound like a socialist, darling.
Call me what you like, as long as the end result is more people getting more instead of only a few getting everything. I'm all for it, you know.
Yeah, burying your money in the Cayman, tax-free Cayman Islands is not the answer.
No, what a bunch of scam artists. Those people are detestable.
It's not even fun. There's nothing wrong with making a lot of money. It's why.
No, absolutely not.
I'm saying how you spend your money is a responsibility, and you have to do it with integrity and looking to serve the community, not yourself.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. The robber barons were atrocious too. They exploited labor to beat the band, but you know they had an eye on a bigger prize, and they were to a certain extent a lot more responsible for their communities than these current mega capitalists are. It's nothing, no comparison.
Agree. Gentlemen.
Thomas Jefferson said that a merchant has no loyalty other than the ground he's particularly standing on right now and where he's making a profit.
Yeah.
Well, even Thomas Jefferson knew that there has to be checks and balances. And
exactly.
And, you know, one of
these
our, one deregulation, of our great,
brilliant deregulation fools are nuts.
Right.
Guys, we're at the top of the hour. Wayne, wow. Could you give us your call letters, let people know where they can find you online?
Sure. You'll find me a lot of times on Man with a Muckrake. I'm a contributing editor at they can still read my last post from Engineer of Knowledge, WordPress.com. And I also like to press out for the Progressive Professor. He's a professor with the University in Florida. Brilliant man. Like I said, when he did his political analyzation of the last election, he said that President Obama was going to win every battleground state except for North Carolina. And I was so impressed with the way this man called that bank shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dead on it that he has my ear. I follow him a lot. And I'll repeat the Progressive Professor.
Well, yes, we'll have to take a look at that. I'm Jack Jodell with Saturday Afternoon Post, the Saturday Afternoon Post, all capitals. Google it. You'll find me there. And I haven't posted in 2 weeks now because my computer's been down, but that won't last forever. I will be back on track pretty soon, and I try to diversify my comments, not just rants and stuff, but I try to diversify my my articles that I publish, to cover a lot of different things.
You're an education, Jack.
Well, thank you, Gwen, this show is primarily educating people, and that's to be desired. That's awesome. So everybody, please keep listening in, dialing in, and commenting. So we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely, this is a very good venue.
I want to thank you, gentlemen, for being with me today, and I want to thank our sponsors, Roundtree 7. That's the number 7.com. And please go over to our community, our lefty leftist community posting board at thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. That's thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. You'll find this show, Pinko the Bear, The Authority Smashers, Aramarta Feo, and a new member of the Here Be Monsters crowd, Winston Smith from Burning Streets. That's the Worldwide Hippies crowd. Go on over there and take a look. All the shows and posts are over there, along with Lee Camp and Dennis Traynor Jr. and just a host of Punk Patriot, a whole lot of other people. Please go over and listen and get some information. That's it for today. That's it for this week. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Gwen,
you
and everybody. Keep thinking forward.
Always a pleasure.
Forward.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye. Now we'll talk to you next week.
Be safe out there, you guys.
And you too, Gwen. Thank you so much.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.